Now then, this last week, my house group had a bit of a bagging time of Easter eggs, which were a bit embarrassing because I've known for 3 months that I've been preaching today and that I was going to be preaching on Easter eggs. I want to take you back, children. Everybody back to being a child. Now, if you're my age, you will have witnessed a historic change. And a few of you are thinking, I know what it is. When I was younger and little, when Easter eggs seemed to be bigger for some reason, where were the chocolate buttons? Inside! Exactly! Inside, yeah, inside. There used to be inside the egg, didn't there? I've not imagined this. I did actually ask Bert, Bert, I've not imagined this. They did used to be inside. He said, yeah. So on that Easter day, I don't know about how it was in your house, we were giving them our Easter eggs first thing in the morning, just after breakfast, and then they were put on the sideboard until we'd been to church and Sunday school, and then we'd come back, have us dinner, and then before we went out to afternoon Sunday school, because we were hardcore, we were allowed to have one Easter egg, yeah? It was part of an Easter egg we were allowed to have. So you do the... Well, I want to tell you about one eventful Sunday. I don't know how old I was. I was too scarred by it. I thought, my first thought was, well, maybe it's so jam-packed with buttons, there's no room for them to rattle. So, I don't know about in your house, but we always used to think of inventive ways of opening Easter eggs. Sometimes we'd try and split them so that you got two halves. Then we realised that if you did that, it was easy for your parents to say, well, just have half and we'll put half away. So, yeah. Sometimes, it'd be, which hammer shall we use? Not that sledgehammer, no, that'll make a mess. Sometimes we'd make the mistake of taking them out of the wrapping first and they go all over the place. Yeah. Sometimes we use what we used to call the chop-chop method, or use your head, yeah? I don't know, but that eventful day, when I broke into it and peeled back the wrapping, Mum! You've got a dud! Have you got a receipt still? There's no buttons in it. None. Oh, it ruined Easter for me. No buttons. I think the thing that had really ruined it is that I'd already put the box in the bin. I didn't understand what was going off. The buttons should be in the egg. And in a strange, very strange, trying to understand it kind of way, I'm guessing that's a bit like Mary felt. When she got to that tomb, when you put someone who's dead in a cave, that's where they're supposed to stay. It's like your keys. When you put them in your pocket, they're supposed to be in your pocket next time you look, aren't they? Mary gets to the tomb and there's no Jesus. Now she's mixed up already. She's heartbroken. And she gets to the cave and what's going off? What's going off? She's confused. She's upset. She's so upset that she goes back and gets two of the disciples, Peter and John, and tells them, somebody's taking Jesus' body. And I don't know whether they kind of went, she's imagining it, she's upset. We'll go and find out for ourselves. So they run. I get this, I don't know about you, I get this picture of these two blokes running. And there's Peter, I think he's a prop forward. And he's kind of running, it's that running where your legs seem to move lots. But no, actually happens. And then there's Peter, I think he's a bit... there's John, I think he's a bit like Lynn for Christie. And he's, Usain Bolt, he's gone. But when he gets there, he don't go in. But they have a look. And Mary's right. The body has gone. There's no body there. They're confused. They're upset. So Peter and John go home for a cup of tea. But Mary lingers. So as we've seen, Mary confused, grieving. Will's been, must have felt like she'd been put in a bag and shaken. Discombobulated, to use one word. And what was strange had just got stranger. And then we come to this bit. Nigel can flick on. You know, usually in Agatha Christie, the butler did it. Well, the gardener did it. That's what Mary assumes. She sees this bloke there. The gardeners are a pretty room lot. He's bound to have done it. We always get it in the Nichols gardeners. It's always us. Who brought that plant pot? The gardener did it. Yeah. Yeah. Does anybody know who that is, by the way? Jeff Hamilton. Not Jeff Hamilton, no. Same time as Jeff Hamilton. Jeffrey Smith. Jeffrey Smith, another one of the boys from back home. Met him once in Harrogate. He's a Methodist. He's actually a Methodist local preacher. Well, he was. He's dead now, I think. Yes, that's right. He worked at Arlo Car, RHS. Anyway, another thing. The gardener did it. And you can almost imagine Mary Magdalene's almost saying, look, no one's been hurt so far. Just tell me where Jesus' body is. I'll go and get it. I'll sort it out. Nobody needs to know. Nobody needs to be further distraught by this. There's only three of us, and yourself know what's happened. We can minimise this. And this is bearing in mind that she's already kind of, she's fended off two of the most apparent dumb questions in the world. She stood at a grave. She's actually gone. She probably got with her the stuff to anoint Jesus' body. The body's missing. She's in pieces. Angels and this gardener bloke say, well, why are you crying? And it'd be very easy to see them, that question is a dumb question. But actually, I wonder if what the gardener was actually doing was breaking the ice. Whether he was assessing Mary's understanding of the situation. Why are you crying? After all, had Jesus not said that after 3 days, he'd rise? You know, as we've already said, for Mary, the problem was Jesus wasn't where she expected him to be. And I wonder for us, this Easter, is Jesus where we expect him to be? Is he maybe even where we put him? We'll come on to that a bit further later on. We've talked about eggs. We've talked about the gardener did it, misunderstandings and misrecognisation. I wonder if you've ever been in a crowd. I don't know what kind of crowd. This happened to me just the other day, actually. Last week, I was buying some sheep food over at Leicester Low in Ashbourne, and it was quite busy, lots of people buzzing around, and I was in what's called task mode. If you're not sure what that means, ask Bert. It means nothing else gets in the way. It means an elephant could fall from the sky and I wouldn't notice because I'm in task mode. I'm doing what I need to do. I'm getting these bags of sheep nuts. When all of a sudden, through all the babble, through all the noise that's happening in this place, I hear, "Rob? Yeah? Wrong Rob. Who knew? Another Rob there. Anyway, I wonder if you've ever been in a situation like that where loads of people, loads of noise, loads of activity, and then cutting straight through it, somebody calls your name. Cutting straight through it. And it's almost as if no one else is there. You see that picture of that dog in the middle? This sometimes happens with Rufus when... that's not Rufus, by the way. You couldn't get out of Rufus to stay still long enough to get a picture. He's doing his thing, and you're saying, "Come here, come here, come here." And it's not just a Rufus that he stops, and his ears go up, and he's suddenly switched on. He recognises not just his name, but the voice of the one that's called him. And that's what happened for Mary Magdalene. In all the confusion, in all the dazedness, in all the kind of emotions that were flying about all over the place, in all the sadness, in all the grief, suddenly, Mary. It's her name. And she switches on like that. But it's not just that it's her name, it's that she recognises the voice of the one who called her. What did Jesus say earlier on in John? "My sheep recognise my voice." It's another sermon, but anyway. And then her face changes. She's surprised, but she's not surprised like, "Oh, I didn't expect that anvil to fall on my foot." She's surprised, "Wow, this is amazing, it's Jesus." She cries out, "Rabboni," because that's how she knew him. She knew him as teacher. She'd followed him. She'd been a student of this rabbi. And she called out, "Jesus, it's you." Yeah. And it's strange, well, not strange, but Jesus, in his godly knowledge, didn't launch into some great explanation of where he'd been for the last 3 days or why. He simply called Mary by name. Because at the heart of the Christian message is not the theology or the theory, the hows and the whys, but it's a desire of God to know you and to be known by you. And for all the kind of questions that we sometimes put up, well, what about this and what about that? In the middle of it all is that God wants to know you. And he wants you to know him. And I think it's wonderful that having met with Jesus, Mary finds very little effort for to go and pass on what she's witnessed. Mary finds it the most natural thing to go and tell her friends, "I've seen the Lord." So I wonder, this Easter, are you aware that this God, that this Jesus who called Mary all them years back, is still calling you and I? And he's not saying, "Oh, you lot." He's not saying, "You people in England." is not even saying, hey, you people in Little Over, or Little Over Methodist Church, he's saying, hey, John. Hey, Mary. Hey, Simon. It's me. Know me. Love me. Follow me. Maybe for the first time, that is what you're hearing Jesus saying. Or maybe for the umpteenth time, as we walk on in discipleship with Jesus, we hear his voice saying, hey Rob, it's me. Final thing to say is that the wonderful thing is that, you know, if it is the umpteenth time that you've heard Jesus call you, and you take note of that, having been called, having met with Jesus, she went, Mary went and shared. The wonderful little thing is that Jesus didn't leave her to it. Because while the disciples were still afraid, Mary had told her story, Jesus came and met with them too, bringing his peace and his joy. So be encouraged. If Jesus is calling you, if it's your name, don't ignore him. Turn to him. I'd love to speak to you about that. I'll be stood at the door at the end. But if Jesus is calling your name for the umpteenth time and he's saying, come on then, tell somebody else. Be encouraged. He'll not leave you to do it on your own. He'll go with you. He'll meet the people that you meet and spread his peace and his joy. Amen.